Blog Talk Radio.
Saturday, PM Eastern Standard Time. Here's the sign for you. With your host, Avenger State Lander, and the Beast.
I'll just add my own EOS, Cthulhu Photography.
Alright, thanks for tuning in. I'm Beast Zeno. This is my co-host, Benger Satanis. Benger, how are you doing today?
Doing good. How are you?
The pranks of Devil's Night apparently started on me today, so today's topic is definitely going to be appropriate. We have on the air with us Born from Mendez Collection, or the Good of Mendez website. Born, how are you doing today?
Not too bad. Good afternoon. How are you guys doing?
Excellent.
Doing good.
Good. So you were saying that the pranks have started early on you. What happened there?
Oh, it's called Baby's Mama Drama. I'm sure you're well familiar with it.
I am, all too familiar.
Yeah, I don't think I really need to go into the specifics of it. I can kind of leave it right there, man.
Yeah. So Devil's Night. And a night that I used to enjoy quite a bit when I was a kid. I don't know about you guys, but had my fun with pranks and things like that.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I celebrated it every year up until this past year in traditional fashion of egging, toilet papering, baloney on cars, moving for sale signs in the nice pretty yards, you name it. If it
baloney
caused terror, I did it. What's that?
Baloney on cars?
Yeah, baloney on cars. If you put a slice of bologna on the paint of a car, the morning sun will cook it into the paint of the car.
Oh,
this is bad.
It's Devil's Night, bro. It's supposed to be bad.
Well, I had never actually heard about that until a few years ago. So I don't know. I was a good kid, I guess. I didn't run with a bad crowd. I never really did any sort of pranks, and I didn't even know that there was a special night for doing shit like that. So this is all going to be news to me.
Yeah, it's been a long-standing tradition, apparently, predating World War II. Started in the 30s, and pretty much took place, started in Detroit, of all places, and eventually escalated from, you know, bar soap and toilet paper and trees, things like that, escalated all the way to arson, which was a form of insurance fraud for a lot of people who had the dilapidated dwellings out there at the time. They've mentioned it even in movies, like I'm sure you're familiar with the movie The Crow, which was
pretty
much
the first time I'd ever heard of it, is that movie right there. And I didn't know if it was a made-up thing for, like, a year or two after that, or if that was, like, an actual thing, or, you know, if it was just colloquial with places like Detroit and, and, like, maybe New York or something like that, and not really throughout the rest of the country or other places in the world. So
kind of branched out after the 70s. It started moving out to places like Ireland, England. In England, they call it Mizzy Night, I guess, which is short for Mischief Night. Pretty much the same thing. This blog that I was reading, though, talks about bricking windows, which I'm sure just involves throwing bricks through windows. So.
Yeah, sounds pretty self-explanatory.
Yeah, so as when I was growing up, 16, 17, 18, I lived in a small town. There wasn't a whole lot for the teenagers to do in that town, so Mischief Night was a night where about 400 of us would actually gather in the downtown core of this town and buy flats of eggs and toilet paper, things like that, go around smashing pumpkins. And there were times where, the police would have to show up in riot gear and kind of monitor the situation because there'd be so many of us in the downtown core that we'd shut the streets off and just have these huge, huge egg fights. So that was a lot of fun. Good times.
Absolutely. The smashing of pumpkins is always my favorite, especially if you were clever enough to be able to get into somebody's car and smash it inside of there.
Sounds like some of your mischief was a lot more damaging, cooking bologna into a car.
I even experimented with the old lemon juice on the windshield. I found out that shaving cream will leave a permanent impression on a garage door if you spray paint a big symbol in shaving cream and it sits there and cooks through the morning sun. I was definitely a destructive child, that's for sure.
People that you knew and like didn't like, or just random people, or how did that go?
Well, there's an old saying, man, that chaos is fair, and I didn't discriminate at all. Everybody got it.
I see. Okay.
Yeah, I can't say that my mischief was very directed as well. I'm sure there were some innocents that got it, but I don't know. I've also been outside scraping eggs off of windows and. So, it's pretty misdirected for the most part, but I'm sure there are people who use it as an excuse to exercise a little bit of retribution.
Yes.
Yeah, well, I think that goes outside of the spirit of the holiday, really, so.
The spirit of holiday being a dick?
It's just a night of celebration of anarchy and chaos and mischief. As a matter of fact, tonight I'm going to a local festival here in Tampa called Guavaween. I will probably do a little bit of mischief making while I'm out this evening as well, which is kind of in my blood at this point.
What I want to know is, did anyone ever, was anyone out there, prepared for, people coming by and doing stuff? And sort of lying in wait or something. I can imagine, I probably even heard a story or two of people that were expecting this sort of thing, beforehand and would maybe sit in the dark or the bushes or looking out through their window with a BB gun or a bullhorn or something and turn the tables on the prankster. Has that ever happened to you guys or you heard about stories like that?
That's never happened to me personally. I do have a friend that, decided that he was going to get back at someone who had been bothering him all year. Bought a flat of eggs, kept them behind his furnace for almost the whole year. They looked like kiwis pretty much by the time he brought them out of the basement. Didn't even get to throw one, and the guy was pretty much expecting them and pelted them with paintballs from a paintball gun. As soon as he got up on the yard. So that never ended up happening, but we did later on that night find the flat of eggs had been picked up and thrown all over the place in the downtown core that I was mentioning earlier. So you know, I don't know if someone else got a hold of those or if the guy protecting his own home decided to go out with them later. I mean, that's a tool that's just too good to pass up. Eggs were absolutely terrible. They had to sandblast them off the walls.
Oh, that's such a beautiful thing right there.
Yeah, and the smell. The smell was probably
one of the worst. It was just repulsive, I'm sure.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's one story that I've heard where someone actually was expecting it. There's been some close calls with me, but I never actually got caught. I knew a lot of people who did, but I don't know if maybe I just ran faster or what it was, but luckily I never got caught doing some of the things that I did. And I mean, at one point I took some fishing line, and this was pretty much harmless fun. I took some fishing line and tied it onto the door knocker of someone's house, and then threw it across the wires over the street and hid in some bushes across the street. So what I did then was I pulled on the string, and the knocker kept knocking. The guy would open the door, and there'd be nobody there. So after about 6 or 7 times, he started getting kind of upset. I mean, I'd knock it as soon as the door latched shut. And then eventually he found this string attached to the knocker and, you know, started running across the street. And I ran like hell, got away. But, yeah, 5 or 6 good times of a good laugh with this guy before he finally found that attached to his knocker. So, funny stuff.
That's awesome. That's awesome. I mean, I've done things like, you know, order 15 pizzas for the guy down the street and sit out across the street and watch as he tries to, you know, figure out how he's going to pay for this since... back then, they didn't have caller ID, and all you had to do was get the right address and the right phone number, and you were pretty much stuck with it.
So, Venger,
really
you
sure.
Never went out. Sorry, go ahead.
No, please, Venger. I'd like to hear this.
You never went out and caused any trouble at all.
That was born, not me, that was starting to talk.
Yeah, I was just asking Venger, you know, you never went out and caused any trouble at all as a kid, you know, the night before Halloween or on Halloween?
I never did.
Occasional pumpkin stomp?
Occasionally I did stomp some pumpkins, but that was well after Halloween. To my very... I don't know, my very subtle disposition, I guess I just thought that it would be kind of a waste for pumpkins to be destroyed before Halloween, since they were for Halloween. I don't know, I just had a very logical, like, normal, like, maybe not normal, but by the book approach to life. And you know, if something was against the rules, unless I felt like there was some sort of higher authority or higher principle involved, I always thought it was best to follow the rules. So, no, I never really, you know, acted out or did stuff. I mean, occasionally in the moment, the heat of the moment, you know, if someone was, you know, attacking me or something, I would attack or ridicule them back, maybe. But, I don't know. No one really ever bothered me too much. I mean, there was a little bullying here and there, but usually that wasn't much, and I wouldn't even know where that person lived, you know, because it was just at recess or something. So, even if I did, like, want to target somebody, I wouldn't have known, like, where they lived, and even then, I probably would have been either too afraid of repercussion or something, or been like, well, maybe they had a bad day and that's why they were giving me a hard time that day. I don't know. So yeah, I guess that's not discussion. Sorry.
Oh, that's right. My care was non-discriminative, man. It wasn't about being given a hard time or anything like that. It was, celebrating the American prankster. I would go so far as to do things like duct tape 100 string bombs to somebody's door and then ring the doorbell. So as they open the door, it's just a series of explosions. It was just one night a year that I could, just kind of relax and say this was my excuse to raise hell.
A license to destroy.
Mm-hmm. Precisely it. And I justified it that way all the way up until my late 20s. So
I destroyed a lot of stuff through like G.I. Joe Transformer battles and, He-Man and things like that. But, I never really took my destructive nature or things like that out on, in the real world. I just used fantasy or maybe cathartically got it out watching, like, violent cartoons or something.
Right. Zeno, what do you think was your first excursion out causing problems on Devil's Night?
Actually, the very first time, I was about 9 years old, and there was this kid in my neighborhood. His name was Chris Prinsky. Chris Prinsky was, I would say, about 7 years older than me, so he was 15, 16, somewhere in there. He told me the story, and I still to this day am yet to ever find any kind of actual real parallel to this, but he told me the story of a New England, what do you want to call them, a New England town back in the pilgrimage days, and that they used to actually celebrate Halloween trick-or-treating multiple nights. And on one particular night, the local Indians dressed up in masks and went in and murdered the entire town, and this is where the tradition of Devil's Night came from. And so then after that, he invited me out to go egging in celebration of it. Well, being that I was really huge into Halloween already, I thought it was really cool that there was a second day that, kind of kept the spirit going or started the spirit, so to speak. So that would probably be the first year I went egging that year. And I did get caught.
Oh, you did?
Oh, I got caught.
Was
yeah,
that was just a dragging you home by your ear kind of thing, or?
Yeah, it was a
more
dragging
trouble?
Me home by my ear kind of thing. It was a real small town that I lived in at the time. There were only probably about 2,000 or 3,000 people total for the entire town. So, everybody already kind of knew the teenagers did that sort of thing. I just happened to be too small to run fast enough to get away.
My first experience, I was around the same age, about 8 or 9, and actually got a hold of some WD-40 that was in my dad's garage. At some point, I'm not sure how I came to the revelation that stuff is flammable, but at some point I did. We used to go around now. Nowadays, they put flashlights and battery-operated lights in the pumpkins, and I kind of wonder sometimes if this might be why. But we used to go around and spray WD-40 into the pumpkins while these candles were lit. And, of course, they would set ablaze quite nicely. And there were quite a few times where there were some close calls as far as large fires were concerned. Luckily, I never got caught doing stuff like that. But that was my first experience with it. Was I kind of downgraded from starting fires to just throwing eggs. And I think starting fires was a little scary.
I kind of went the reverse direction. I started with egging, and by the end of my participation in the prankster aspect of it, I would say I got a little bit excessive at certain points. So, obviously the major destruction of vehicles, destruction to homes, destruction to yards. It was a long time, really, before I realized it was a felony if I got caught. So,
Now, I was reading a bit of this blog on the history of Devil's Night, and they were also mentioning that in Germany they have a night called Hexenacht, or Witch's Night, and that's actually celebrated on the night of April 30th into the morning of May 1st, which, of course, is Walpurgisnacht. And this was a night that all the kids out there would go out and engage in pranks and mischief and things like that. So I found that kind of interesting that they don't do it so much on Halloween, but Walpurgisnacht, and, you know, calling it Witch's Night, that seems almost like more of a tradition than Hell Night would be. To me, anyway.
Yeah. I could definitely see that. I'm curious as to, you know, what the mythology behind it would be in terms of why they chose to do that particular night.
It doesn't really go into much detail. It just mentions the Hexenacht or Witch's Night.
Didn't really go into
too much detail.
What about, well, I was just watching an episode of The League on TV just a couple nights ago. They were talking about Halloween and the other one, which normal people pronounce Samhain, but other people, like this one Wicca girl in particular on the episode, pronounced Samhain or something.
Samhain.
Anyway,
yes.
They were having a séance or something for this like evil ghost monkey named Potato. And it's a weird show. And she was saying something about Halloween being the one night of the year when the membrane between like the material world and the spirit world was the thinnest. And there was more communication and interaction and whatever. And that instantly reminded me of Walpurgisnacht, because that is supposed to be, you know, at least for most occultists and magicians and whatever. You know, May Eve is supposed to be that one particular night when the veil between the two different worlds is the thinnest, and you know, you can actually get more shit done, I guess. So I don't know if there's a connection there or where that stems from. Maybe there's like an older commonality myth where that comes from both things, or I don't know. It seems like a similarity there.
Yeah, what I find interesting about that is if you look at the dates, April 30th and October 30th, they're exactly 6 months apart seem to both be the climax of the equinoxes there. You know, you have the fall equinox and then the spring equinox. The interesting thing being there that you would expect that the fall equinox would be more related to, you know, the cycle of death and, you know, preparation for the cold winter, and then, you know, the spring equinox being the renewal and the rebuild. So I'm not sure. I would think that, you know, Samhain would be closer to relation to the dead, things like that. You look at Mexican culture and their whole deal with muerte and, you know, observing the deaths of their ancestors and things like that that they celebrate around the Halloween time. It seems like the dead and spirits of the dead are far more observed within the October months, the fall equinox area, rather than the spring. So I find that kind of interesting that that's also viewed as, you know, a night where the dead can be contacted as well, being the spring equinox there. That's interesting. But that is something that I noticed. Yeah, they're pretty much exactly 6 months apart. Fall on either side of the equinox.
See, my understanding has always kind of gone in the scenario in which you stated that you would think it was, that Samhain was the opening of the season of the dead, and then May Eve was the, you know, celebration of rebirth or renewal. So, to think of it as both of them being the same point is kind of interesting to me as well. I'm not really sure if it's historically supported in that way.
Definitely have to look more into, you know, the traditions that follow both of those evenings. Once I have something compiled, I'll probably post a blog or something, and I'll put that up on my site, The Mendes Collection. You can always visit that site at the URL, thegoatofmendes.com. And, of course, that's an S on the end of Mendes, not a Z. But, yeah, that'll take you right there, and I should have a blog up within the next month or so, because I do find this interesting, so I'm definitely going to be digging into that topic.
Yeah, it's certainly very fascinating. I thought it was a great idea for a topic for today, considering today is Devil's Night. So I just, when you brought it up, man, I thought, oh, that's awesome. So
7 more years before you'll be able to do a Saturday show on it again.
If this show makes it to 7 years from now, I think part of the show will have to be some kind of prank.
That would be wonderful. That would be a great way to go. How old is the youth now?
About a year and a month or something like that. 13 months old. Does that sound right, Venger?
What? Oh, I thought you were talking about your... I thought you were talking about something completely different. You mean the show?
Yes.
Yeah. Yep. About 13 months. I think the middle of September was the 1 year mark. So, yeah. So about a little over 13 months ago. Yeah.
It's been a fun 13 months, and if we get to that 7 year mark, we're certainly going to have a big prank on that. The same show. So, Nagashiva is actually verifying our start date as being 9/23 of last year. So,
yeah, so 13 months. Yeah. Well, that's good. That's a good long run so far. So, good stuff.
All right. Now, I'm curious, did you find any other interesting factoids? I know that you said that in Detroit it was actually used for insurance scams. I mean, is there any major stories that came from that?
Well, what it is in the early 70s, there was a lot of vandalism that had escalated to some more severe acts like arson and things like that. Within Detroit, and it basically had a lot to do with property owners being unable to sell a lot of their homes in you know, what was then a rapidly declining housing area, which of course has not gotten any better, you know, 30 years later. It was pretty much, you know, people used it as an excuse to burn down their homes and collect the insurance money. Pretty straight and simple, and I'm pretty sure that there was a lot of transactions that went on there where people would pay, you know, hooligans or gang members or whatever to do it. So it ended up being an evening where, you know, firebugs and arsons could actually cash in as well. So that's pretty much what it comes down to, is that they weren't able to sell their homes, so that's what they ended up doing. In the mid to late 80s, there were more than 800 fires set. In 1984, 500 to 800 fires were set in a three-day period during the nights before Halloween. So that was pretty much the peak, but by the early 1990s, they were starting to see a decline in those house fires and things like that. After a brutal night, I'm reading from a blog here now, after a brutal night in 94, the mayor, named Dennis Archer at the time, promised the city residents that there wouldn't be any more arson going on. This is where they actually started with, I don't know if you guys remember, back in the 90s there were a lot of, they called them the angels. They were going around and they would kind of police your neighborhoods. They wore the red berets and stuff. That's actually how this all started, was from these Devil's Night arsons and things like that. Each year as many as 50,000 volunteers would gather and patrol the neighborhoods and try and curb a lot of the arson and things like that that were going on. So that's actually where they were founded too. So that's a bit of a factoid as far as arson and then the subsequent reactions too.
I had two things. Born, could you throw the link to that blog you're reading from into the chat room?
Yeah.
And also, we have a caller on the line, so I'm going to go ahead and take them.
Sure.
Well, I think so, if it lets me. Yeah, there we go. Caller, you're on the line.
I just want to congratulate you guys on being up over a year now.
Thank you, Satan.
Yeah, hey, would you guys, since you guys seem to be doing so well, I just wonder if you could do me a favor. See, I haven't had, like, a date in, like, about 3,700 years. Could one of you guys just fill in for me tomorrow night? I mean, I know it's a big thing, it's kind of short notice and all, but I would really appreciate it. Could you help me out?
Yeah, I'd be happy to. Maybe Beast and I could tag team it for you.
Yeah, you'll have a hell of a time. Well, anyway, I'll Twitter you with everything I need, okay? And catch y'all later.
Oh, this is funny as hell.
Oh, my God.
And they're gone just as quick as I came, man.
Show up with tweets.
What an absolute honor to have the Lord Father Satan visit us on this day.
Yeah, I think we're one of the only Blog Talk Radio shows for that to happen. Right, East?
I would have to assume we are.
We'll have to put the feather in our cap. So, hey, already I think we're off to a great new second season. Huzzah!
Excellent. So, I'm a little starstruck after having such a celebrity come on for a visit there.
Wow, that was just awesome. I'm right there with you, man. I'm sitting here just trying to figure out what even happened. I know it's normally somewhat of an ongoing tradition for there to be some cock talk on the radio show at one point in time, but I want to share with you guys that my son has rediscovered again that his penis goes to the fly of his shorts, and he's currently sharing it with the household. So,
Sweet. It's a big day for him too, then.
Yes, good day for him.
Revelation.
Yeah, man. We got a little bit of wind, it seems like. I'm assuming that means that you're outside, Bender?
Yeah. Oh, wow. I didn't know you could tell that. Yeah, I just actually walked outside. It's actually a nice day. It's like 65, which for the tail end of October is weird. And it's all sunny. And I was going to – well, I had plans to go on this date, like the first date. But then at this bookstore. But then the girl I was going to go with, she was messaging me while, like, during the show, saying, like, oh, her friends from Chicago are in today, and she's going to stop by, but, you know, she can't promise anything. I was like, oh, fuck you. Because, oh, my God, because women do that bullshit, you know, all the time. It's just so frustrating. And so anyway, I was thinking, like, oh, I wouldn't get a lot of time to get outside and, like, enjoy the nice weather and stuff. Because next thing I know, it's going to be, like, 4 o'clock. It's probably going to be 50 degrees. Like, not sunny anymore. Cold, shit. I mean, it's already windy. But So I was like, oh, I should get out while I can. Fuck. So that's why I'm outside. That's why I sound incredibly windy.
Wow. Well, I've got to say, I was really looking for something more interesting about the Devil's Night thing to hopefully complement whatever Warren had to say about the show. But honestly, I mean, there's really not a lot of written history on it and the events that may have occurred in it. Although I did know that it's pretty popular in fiction.
Oh, okay.
You know,
to be honest, I kind of thought that after about 10 minutes of the Devil's Night thing, it was, you know, the conversation was going to spin off and we'd talk about a bunch of other shit. I didn't know the whole show was going to be, or the majority of the show was actually going to be on that. Otherwise, I would have maybe prepared a little something or read up on the subject. I kind of thought it was going to go the way of, like, that role-playing game episode where we talked about role-playing games for about 7 minutes, and then Satanic Zach was on, and we talked about, like, everything but that for the rest of the show.
Right. Well, I mean, there's actually at least some interesting stuff about it. Like, for instance, I'm sitting here looking at the Wikipedia page on it, and they list at least, it appears, 8 or 9 movies that all feature the concept of Devil's Night within it. So,
absolutely, yeah. It's a good precedence for anything as far as fiction goes. I mean, all you have to do is mention Devil's Night, and there's already an air about it. You know, there's already a sort of atmosphere that it generates, which is excellent. That really speaks volumes of, you know, what these nights all about, when it can actually give someone a vibe just by the very mention. That's definitely moves into the notoriety
right.
Categorization.
Yeah, the name definitely has a ring to it, and it kind of evokes certain ideas of, you know, even lawlessness and that sort of thing. If you go look at the movies, they're beasts. I'd be very interested to hear them. I know about The Crow, but what other movies focus on?
Let me see. Is it Gross Point Blank?
Oh, really?
Yep.
Huh. That's a great movie.
It was also chronicled, let me see, in the movie, the Canadian horror movie Left for Dead.
Okay, I'll take a picture.
8 Mile with Eminem.
Mile. Oh, Eminem, right. I've seen that. That was okay.
And then, and actually the rest of these references aren't movies, they're books. The 1990 nonfiction book Devil's Night and Other True Tales of Detroit. Let me see what else is in here. Laura Bickel's urban fantasy novel Embers. It appeared on an episode of Nickelodeon's animated show Rocket Power. The 6th episode of the 6th season of the CBS drama Criminal Minds was titled Devil's Night. So there's a lot of different references. This is just what's been captured on, obviously, on Wikipedia. So I'm sure that you could find more if you really look.
Right.
Yeah, I'm actually seeing.
Oh, go ahead.
Sorry, go ahead. Oh, I was just going to say that I'm also seeing here there's something listed as Missouri Folklore Society Journal, 2002, written by Adam Brooke Davis. Devil's Night and Halloween, the linked fates of two folk festivals. That was another writing that I've seen here on the link that I posted in chat there. Also, for anyone in Canada who might be listening to the show today, we have a province, Quebec, that's our French-speaking province. Out there, it's Devil's Night is known as Mat Night, and basically they go around stealing people's doormats. I don't know if that's like a Jerry Lewis level of humor there or what.
It's a little odd, yeah. A little strange humor. I wonder about people doing rituals on Devil's Night. Is that like that's probably a special tradition or something among some individuals or groups, you know, maybe Satanists or whatever. Anyone listening out there that routinely or has done a ritual of some kind on Devil's Night, I'd be interested in hearing them call in, or if someone is monitoring the chat room like Beast.
We're speaking right now about someone calling in, and we have a caller sitting on the line, so I'm going to go ahead and let them through.
Yeah.
Caller, you're on the line.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Going pretty good. How are you?
Good.
Well, yeah, I'm doing all right. I'm a little disappointed in you guys, man. You should have jumped on that opportunity. I mean, how often is it when Satan calls? I mean...
Well,
I would have asked him a couple of questions.
I think we kind of suspected maybe down deep that might not have been the real Satan.
Yeah, well, maybe not.
Yeah,
I always pictured him speaking with an English accent myself. I don't know.
Really?
I don't know. I mean, all the Romans in the Roman movies don't talk like Italians. They speak with English accent. So, I don't know. He's just real old.
That's true.
The
Aramaic speaking Satan from The Passion of the Christ? That would be creepy.
That would be very creepy.
Aramaic is pretty hard just in general anyway, man. It's like I had a pretty hard time with Hebrew myself, and I'm a reverend, so hey, you want to know any questions? I know a decent bit about the cult. I really haven't been actively involved in the stuff in a couple of years, but I've actually been witnesses to a couple of blessings. I've observed somebody that at least believed that they were being possessed and was with another priest that drove the things out. Want to hear about any folklore or anything like that? It's your show. Anything interesting? Or as far as Devil's Night, maybe? Or
anything you want to talk about?
Absolutely, yeah. I'd be interested to hear about that for sure.
Well, you want to know why? Here's something interesting that a lot of people don't know. Y'all know who Ronnie James Dio is, right? The guy that did like the devil's symbol. Well, anyway, he passed away here recently, and what he did was called the Malikio, and what that is, it actually was supposedly a good luck charm. It wasn't really evil at all. See, the thing is Malikio is the sign of the little horn guy who is a Greek and Roman god named Pan. Now, Pan, if you've ever seen a picture of him, he has like goat legs, a human's body, and devil horns. Okay? And he basically kind of sort of looks like what today thinks of when you draw a picture of Satan. But the thing is, the kind of animal he is, even though he's mythical or whatever, is called a satyr. And it's thought that just because of misunderstanding of the word, that they thought Satan and satyr were the same thing. So they equated the appearance of the devil to Pan, which is actually like a Greek god of hunters and sheep and shepherds.
Pan associated with mischief too,
mischief. Yeah, well, yeah, mischief too. But he wasn't evil.
Okay.
He was mischievous. Yeah.
Right. Kind of like Loki, maybe from the Norse
very
mythology.
Similar. Yes, very similar. In fact, the word hell that we use today is not Jewish or Greek. Actually, hell is a term that was used in Norse mythology for their underworld.
Right.
Actually, in rabbinic law and Jewish law, most Jews don't believe in hell. Did you know that?
Right. Yeah, I did know that. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, it's a the fire brimstone, that whole thing, that's Norse mythology, not Jewish or
right.
Greek. Kind of interesting, I think.
Right. But, do Jews believe in heaven? I don't even think I know
they,
that.
They believe in heaven. They just they
oh, okay.
Well, to some extent, you know, a lot of them. It's kind of interesting. You know, there's sects of Jews just like any other. Some of them do. The most Orthodox don't believe in heaven or hell.
Right. I remember reading about...
believe, you know, whatever good or bad is going to happen to you happens to you in life.
Right. I remember this thing, it's not really hell, but it's I think it's called Sheol or something.
Mm-hmm.
It's just sort of like this dark,
yeah.
empty place that maybe happens to you or some people when they die, but it's not really hell or full of punishment. It's just kind of like maybe a void or something, or some sort of,
It's like the pit of despair.
Oh, yeah.
Have
you
guys ever seen the movie, what? I'm sorry.
Oh, go ahead.
Well, have you ever seen the movie Monty Python and the Holy Grail? You know?
Yes.
It's like, this is the pit of despair. What is your name and what is your quest? Actually, that comes from folklore, stating that you had to ask two or three questions. Either that, or you got thrown into hell. That's originally where that whole pit of despair thing came from. That's sort of a mixed mishmax between Jewish and Norse mythology. So I thought that was funny.
I remember that well. One of the questions was, what is your favorite color?
My favorite color?
Yeah, Naga just mentioned that in chat. Yeah, what is your favorite color?
Yeah.
And, of course,
well,
one of them got it wrong.
Yeah, that's the funniest part.
That's the really
going off the other guy's answer, and he's like, oh, wait, no, my favorite color is blue. Ah!
Yeah.
What is the
air?
A fully laden swallow. I don't know that.
I had also read somewhere
that
Jesus visited a town called Hell, H-E-L, and during his visit, he managed to walk past a pit that this town had constantly burned garbage, refuse, debris, and even, you know, executed criminals' bodies, things like that, and that may have somehow turned into the whole burning flesh eternally, you know, an eternal hellfire scenario, things like that. I forget where I had read that, but I have read that.
Well, actually, what you're talking about, I know what you're talking about exact. Actually, the dump grounds outside of Jerusalem, where the thing is the concept that Christ talked about with the disciples is you'd be cast away and burned. Well, so the conception that they had is that you'd be thrown away like the trash in Jerusalem is. It was just a big smoldering, really hot, probably pretty dangerous, stinky kind of heap. If you got thrown in there, that would be a really horrible way to die. So that was probably the concept that you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Interesting.
I sure wouldn't want to go there.
Right. Well, it's, yeah.
You know, a lot of burning, smoldering trash.
Yeah, it's funny how people take a certain kind of teaching or wisdom. And then they kind of make up these myths, like, around it. And then, of course, it degenerates or becomes perverted to a way where it doesn't really resemble much of the original teaching. I don't know if you guys know too much about the Fourth Way and Gurdjieff and Ouspensky and things like that, but Heath and I are very well versed in that. And you can see different things in, like, the teaching of Jesus Christ and... you know, in other pieces of wisdom and fragments of, you know, forgotten teaching and lore and stuff. And, like, the original stuff, very powerful and profound. But then you get, like, modern-day Christians, which corrupt it, and then it becomes almost worthless.
Mm-hmm. Well, actually, you know, that was one of the more successful traits of the Roman Empire. It's one of the reasons why they lasted so long. Whenever they conquered a new area, instead of making them kick out their gods, because, you know, the Romans were polytheistic, you know,
right.
They just let you keep their gods. You know what the really main thing is? They didn't want you to fight, and they wanted you to pay taxes. They were
right,
practical
right.
folks. You know, and the thing is you could worship wherever you want to, you know, as long as you didn't give the Romans problems with their gods and you paid taxes.
Yeah.
Well, the problem with the Jews is not so much that they wouldn't pay taxes, but they wouldn't recognize the authority and lordship of the emperor at the time,
right.
You know, which, of course, he claimed himself to be a deity. Well, they wouldn't bow down to him. Well, you know,
right.
The Romans, for pretty much, always attacked all these polytheistic, you know, mini-god-type countries and never had run across anybody that had given them this kind of problem before. So, you know, that's how that all got started. But the Romans started that tradition, and I'm not slamming Catholics. I mean, that, you know, it's their denomination, they can do what they want. But that's very, very characteristic, you know, what the Catholic Church specifically has done over the years was really characteristic of what was one of the reasons why the Roman Empire was so successful. Is because, well, they changed their times and they blended with the changing viewpoints and stuff like that.
Right. By the way,
know, there are some people
Catholic?
That believe you shouldn't do that, but, you know,
yeah,
that's religion.
This is the U's, though, so you can bash Catholics. It's okay. You can take your anger out on any right-hand path, you know, spirituality or religion if you want. It's okay. We won't mind.
You know, vegans really piss me off, to be honest, but
vegans?
No, I don't know.
Those goddamn non-meat eaters.
You know who really hates me off? You know, everybody complains about the aliens. You know what? I agree. Those darn Canadians with their tasty bacon, man, I wish they would stop coming in this country because, you know, I mean, now, I mean, every night I have to go get some bacon. You know, I've gained 25 pounds. Aliens are destroying this country, man. I'm telling you.
Yeah. Don't forget maple syrup.
Well, you know,
maple syrup, too. That's what we did for bacon.
Maple syrup
probably
didn't do your waistline any favors either.
Mm-hmm. You know, and that's another thing that makes me mad. I was watching this movie, you know, you're talking about horror stuff and scary things. You know, I was watching Armageddon the other night with a friend of mine. It's like, man, that's horrible, you know, and of course, my friend, brilliant as he is, says, "No, man, that's not a big problem." It's like, "What do you mean it's not a big problem?" It's like, "No, man, the solution's serious, man. All you have to do, if a meteor's coming towards Earth, you know, just slow it down and detain it just long enough, you know, for the United States to, you know, to spin out of the way." And of course, yet again, Canada gets a free ride.
Of course. I thought you meant the horror was the movie that you saw was actually Armageddon. And you didn't pick a good movie to watch instead. Although that was the horror you were getting at.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I like the Aerosmith song that's on there. That was pretty good. I'm not a big Affleck fan.
You need to raise your standards a little bit, my friend.
Do what?
You need to raise your standards a little bit, my friend.
What, Aerosmith? Hey, man.
Yeah,
Aerosmith
on the
cool,
soundtrack.
Man. I mean,
it's not a good movie make.
Ah, well. I don't know.
Isle of the Damned. I think everybody should watch that. It's a very modern parody of 1970s Italian cannibal movies. If you want to see something that's hilarious and very well done, but independent and it's just plain cool and reminiscent of that era, Isle of the Damned. You should go and buy it, rent it. It's a great movie. I just saw it a couple weeks ago. Awesome. Any movie?
You know, if you really
want to
see a really good bad movie,
that takes a cake.
You know, actually, if you really want to see a really good bad movie, Peter Jackson, who did the Lord of the Rings, his first movie was called Bad Taste.
Yeah, that's great.
Have you ever seen that?
Oh yeah, you like zombies?
Hilarious.
And yeah, campy.
That's a hilarious movie. In fact,
I mean, he drinks the vomit and then goes back for more.
I'm glad that you actually mentioned that movie. On my site, I have a group called Black Cinema where I post, you know, horror movies. One of the members just recently posted Faces of Death, but they're actually Bad Taste is posted in that group, so I'll share a link on that, and it's actually the full 90-minute. film, so I'll post the link on that in a second, because, yeah, that's a must-see for any zombie fans or gore fans, for sure. I was 100% Peter Jackson back in the good old days. Sam Raimi used to be a good B-movie guy, too, with, you know, The Evil Dead.
Yeah, Evil Dead is, yeah, one of my favorites, all-time favorites, Evil Dead and Evil Dead 2. I mean, Army Dead is fine, too, but that's more funny, silly, campy. But, yeah, especially the first Evil Dead, it's just, you know, balls out horror and, like, zombies and demons and awesome special effects. Oh, my God, I fucking hate CGI. I think it's the worst thing to ever happen to genre movies like horror and science fiction and fantasy. It's a cartoon. It doesn't belong in a real movie. People should use real special effects like Tom Savini and, you know, all those other pioneers back in the 70s and 80s. That's what real cinema should be, you know, real special effects, not this computer-generated crap.
You know what a misnomer that what you just said?
Yeah.
Yeah, you should have real special effects. What does that mean? I mean, that sounds kind of a contradiction of terms.
That aren't made from a computer. You got real blood and real, like, maybe plastic prosthetics or something that you can hold.
Oh,
you know,
okay.
Real that way, like substantial. That you can touch.
Well,
it.
Dude, what you're supposed to say, you're supposed to do it old school. That's what that is. That's old school.
Yeah, but that also implies that it's, you know, well, it is old fashioned, but that it's not as good as what is new,
mm-hmm.
and what is, you know, it's not making progress. It's just going back for nostalgia's sake. But really, if you look at it, well, the old school, quote unquote, special effects are far superior in the way they look. And
yep.
when you have a visual medium like film, it's all about how it looks. You know, if something looks more realistic doing it the older way, then that makes it superior. I don't care if it costs 10 times more to do it on a computer. You know, if it looks shittier and less realistic, then it's worse. It's going backwards in time. It's, you know,
Nosferatu. That was a really cool movie.
Black and white.
Real low tech. But, man, that was so cool. Nosferatu, the original black and white vampire movie. That's a good one. I get what you're saying.
Yeah. Yeah. That's my little soapbox. Every time I think of, like, horror movie special effects, I think, like, oh, my God, they did it so well in the 70s and 80s, especially. Maybe a little bit in the early 90s. But then, oh my God, you know, movies today, I won't see a horror movie today in the theater because I know it's all going to be CGI and it's just going to be crappy and so fast paced that you can't really absorb any kind of atmosphere or, like, you know, characterization or even little plot details. I mean, I saw Paranormal Activity 2 a week ago. That was okay, but even that could have been a lot better.
We're actually running out of time here. Got about a minute left. I'd like to give Bourne, our special guest, the opportunity to plug whatever he'd like to plug, his website, any other thing that he's working on.
Absolutely. The link is thegoatofmendes.com. I'll drop a link into the chat here. I just dropped another link as well for another movie called The Satanic Rites of Dracula. And I'll close in agreeing with Venger that CGI doesn't hold a flame to the talents of people like Tom Savini and things like that. And thank you very much for having me as a guest today.
Oh, you're very
thanks
welcome.
Thanks for
thank
being
you.
On.
Yeah, Cthulhu for talking, bitches.
Yeah, Cthulhu for talking.
Thank you for listening to The Ooze. Opinions expressed by our guests or callers do not necessarily reflect those held by Venture or Beast or any institution associated with us. Views does not condone any illegal or unethical acts. If you have been offended during the production of the show, we're sorry, but as the old expression goes, tough luck. Thank you, and see you next week.